Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 149, recorded on February 1st, 2012. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how's it going?
It's going good.
Awesome.
Yeah, I can't complain, really.
Good. Jeff Gamut's also here from the Mac Observer.
Yeah, sorry I missed a couple weeks.
That's okay. I think it was only 1 week that we missed you.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Last week we didn't do anything. Because both of you guys were at Macworld.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds exciting when you put it that way.
It was actually a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was a really good show.
Yeah.
All right. So in years past, the last Macworld I went to, I believe, was the last one in which Apple had a presence. And that was the one where Phil Schiller got up. Steve didn't even go. But generally speaking, Macworlds of years past opened with a keynote from Steve, and they would unveil some new products, and then there would be, I would say, four days that the expo hall was open?
Yes.
And then, there was the expo hall where you could see all the stuff that was on exhibit, from all the different vendors, the products and software and stuff like that. And you could also take classes. There was the conference as well. And so it was really more than the keynote, but everybody kind of saw Macworld as just that one keynote from Steve Jobs. However, as you can tell by the fact that it's still going on without Steve or Phil or anybody doing a keynote from Apple. Apple wasn't even there this year. They weren't there last year either, right?
Right.
So it's not even called Macworld anymore, right? It's Macworld iWorld, right?
Right. And, you know, I have to point out the last year you were there, Michael, while it is a milestone thing that Apple wasn't there after that, or that was the last year Apple was there, the bigger milestone for me, which is also what made that show bittersweet, that's the last year anyone brought me cookies at Macworld.
Was that me? Did I bring you cookies?
Yes, you did.
Aw. And that was also, wasn't that the year I was deathly ill? Or was that the year before?
The year before was when you were deathly ill.
No. I think the year I was deathly ill was also because I was putting on the party with Arnold Kim at Mac Rumors.
Oh, okay.
I remember because I was basically orchestrating the entire party, and then I was incredibly sick and couldn't really speak, and I was supposed to be like emceeing and doing a bunch of stuff, and I could barely move myself, and like so much so that the doctor that checked me out, I suddenly, like on the morning I was supposed to leave, I got really sick and I almost didn't want to go. Like that sick. And then the next day that I woke up, I felt like I should go to the hospital. So thankfully, the wonderful guy at the front desk said, "Hey, no problem. We got this guy that we call a doctor who does house calls." And he came up and he said, "Yeah, you have the flu, not the stomach kind, but the other horrible kind where you feel like you're going to die. I guess you feel like you're going to die with both of those." And he said he would give the CDC a call to make sure it was cool for me to actually go to the same building with a lot of other people.
And wow.
So it was cool. But yeah, it was a rocky Macworld for me. Ed Kirk really stepped up and made it happen that year. But yeah, so anyway.
But I got cookies, and that's what really matters.
Yeah. And yeah. So.
See, usually you go to Macworld and you get sick.
Right. Yeah.
Probably from people like you.
Yeah. I brought the sickness that year. So, what happened this year?
You asking me?
Sure.
I don't know. I was just there. No, this year was kind of like the first year of the reinventing or re-envisioning, I think, of Macworld by IDG. So what was the full thing is now Macworld iWorld, right? No Expo anymore. And then I think it had the subtext of the ultimate iFan event, which I'm really hoping that they kill the iFan thing. But
because it's a little much.
Huh?
Because it's a little much.
Just too many I whatevers for me. It's sure. getting old.
It looks like it was hard to work with from a marketing standpoint, because all the layout stuff that they did for banners and everything else had to have that big long tagline underneath.
Yeah. Yeah. But the point was is that it was much more to me, or felt much more to me, like a community-oriented conference, which is when Apple announced they weren't going to be at Macworld in that first year when Apple wasn't there. There was a lot of side discussions that I had with people, and everybody seemed to agree that that was the direction that it should move in. That, you know, really, most of us come to this show because of the community, and we want to see the people that we know, we want to network with people that we know online, and kind of all gather in one place, and then you get all of the vendors and the people on the show floor who are also just members of the Mac community, software developers and hardware and accessory makers and stuff like that. And so there was a lot more of that focus. And also they kind of rejiggered the sessions to be, I think, a little more broad in terms of the kinds of topics that they were covering. There was some real kind of more esoteric stuff, but there was still the core stuff too, but it was a good mix. And I think that brought in a much more diverse crowd than you'd seen in years past.
You know, yeah, it was a very diverse crowd compared to previous years.
I was just going to say, and I think that reflects the sort of the changes that are happening just with Apple fans in the Mac community in general, especially with the introduction of iOS and iPads and things like that. And I was talking to Victor Cahiao earlier today about it. And, you know, really, you saw a lot of things focused around sort of the different tiers of what I would call the Mac community. So there were all kinds of stuff in and around photography or music or video or programming or IT, or, you know, depending on whatever interest you had or whatever drew you into being an Apple fan or a Mac user, there was kind of something for everyone there. And I know some people were complaining that, well, it's not enough of a business conference anymore. You know, I can't justify necessarily why I would go there as a business. I think more and more, Apple's becoming more consumer-focused, and I think it makes sense for Macworld to move more in that broader direction. I think they can still have those tracks, like the Mac IT track was still there, for those types of folks, but I do think branching out is the right thing to do. And I think it was reflected in just the buzz and the energy around the show this year. It was hopping. And I talked to a lot of the vendors and they were very happy. They said, you know, the traffic's been really good. People have been very excited to see what we're doing and what we're up to. And, you know, that last year, I don't think that energy was there. And they were still kind of focused on the same sort of show they were doing when Apple and Adobe and Microsoft were there. And those guys aren't there now, but I think what they're proving is that the community will come on its own and they don't need those large corporations just to support it. Saw a lot of Kickstarter kind of stuff there and more grassroots stuff. And to me, that's a lot more fun. You know, all that tiny town stuff, the smaller iOS developers, the smaller Mac developers, and now accessory makers with the help of Kickstarter, there's some really neat stuff happening.
You know, it had more of a festival feel than a conference feel.
And that's what I always liked about Macworld, is the community part.
Well, the community part was even a bigger element this year, which is actually saying something, because it's always been about community. And and what Adam was saying about the energy being there, the vendors, pretty much every vendor I spoke with was very pleased with the show. All the vendors that were actually selling product at the show, it didn't matter when it was, what time of day, if I walked up to a booth and they were selling product, there was money being exchanged. I mean, people were buying stuff all the time, which is great.
Yeah, a lot of vendors were like, we didn't bring enough product. We had no idea. We didn't think that it was going to go this well.
Oh, awesome.
There were companies that were out of product before Saturday, and Saturday was a big day. Okay, so the show ended at 4 o'clock on Saturday. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm walking through the main lobby area, and the line for people buying tickets just to go see the expo floor on Saturday at 3 o'clock went out the door. It had been out the door pretty much all day.
And usually the last day of the expo is like dead time.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely not.
Yeah, they almost needed to go later too, because every day I was there, I wasn't able to be there on Saturday, but Thursday and Friday, they closed the floor at 5, which I think is about an hour earlier than in the past, which I actually like, because there's a lot of evening events that people need to get to, and you know, I very often end up skipping dinner because it's so close, you know, in terms of the time. But being there at 5, I mean, they had to like flicker the lights and like push people out the door. Like, people didn't want to leave. So
yeah. Okay, so Adam, for the 2 days you were able to be there,
mm-hmm.
did you have trouble navigating the expo floor? Not like finding booths, because that's always a problem at any expo, but actually getting around on the expo floor.
Not too much. It was crowded, but it wasn't overly crowded, which is always a good thing. You know, you want a good crowd and a buzz. Occasionally there were those few booths that like you just could not get into. Yeah. Right. I mean, certain companies was just like, I want to get in here and do an interview. and you just,
they're like, good luck. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's pretty much what I was experiencing too. It was, I had to work to get around because there were that many people there. And then around certain booths, I would just have to give up and go around through a different aisle to get back to where I wanted to go.
Yeah, it was cool. Like I said, a lot of buzz, a lot of energy, and there was always a lot of stuff going on. There were lots of little areas, and that was another thing they had done. And they really opened it up. So, you know, normally if you have the expo only pass, there's only the one, you know, the show floor area that you can get into, but they had other areas, and they needed to do a little bit better job of marketing this. But Michael, like up on the second floor, they had a couple music stages and some art exhibits and things like that people could go up to if they just had the expo only pass. And I think a lot of people didn't know that.
Yeah. It always seemed like that there was more going on than they really let you know about. You'd have to kind of discover those things off on random rooms and things like that. Were there a lot of talks going on?
There were a ton of talks.
Yeah.
So they had the Macworld Expo main stage, which was on the show floor. And then all the sessions, like I said, there were a lot of community focused sessions, and then they did extra things. Like they were really trying to mix up the conference in terms of not having it just be a straight conference. They were bringing in some elements from the unconferences and more of the TED Talk kind of stuff. And they had a whole rapid fire
Ignite style stuff. Yeah.
Did you get to go to the rapid fire thing? I unfortunately did not get to go to the rapid fire thing.
I did not. My schedule was just too tight, and I couldn't go see it.
Yeah, but Ted Landau, I read his Macworld piece over on Mac Observer, and he had gone, and he said he really liked it because, you know, if there were a lot of varied topics again, and if something came up that, you know, maybe wasn't of particular interest to you, it was only 5 minutes and they were on to the next thing. And there were lots of tips and tricks, and it was, you know, anybody could almost submit anything, any kind of 5 minute talk. And so stuff like that, that's, you know, outside the traditional realm of a conference thing, but I think appeals to a much broader range of people.
Awesome. So did you guys see any cool products, maybe one or two cool products that you want to talk about?
I have a ton.
You know, okay.
How much time do you have?
Pick like one or two.
Right. This is a big change from previous years, because last year, the year before, probably the last 3 years, as I would roam the expo floor, there were not any single products that stood out where I was like, "Oh my God, this is amazingly cool." I'd see things where I would go, "Yeah, that's a nice thing."
Mm-hmm.
Glad that's here, but nothing that I was getting really excited about. And this year, for the first time in probably 3 years, I was seeing products where I was getting excited.
Oh.
So I don't know who wants to go first. You want me to go first? You want to go first?
Oh, go ahead,
Jeff. Well, I'll pick a product that I was playing around with since I got back from the show, and I got it at the show. I had heard a lot about it. Actually, I have a friend from Nick Software when I worked there, who told me about this. And it's the Olo Clip. Have you heard of the Olo Clip, Michael?
No.
Okay, so the Oloclip is this cool lens system for the iPhone 4 and the iPhone 4S. And what's cool about it to me is the size. It's literally small enough to fit in your pocket. Gives you three different lens options. It gives you a macro, a fisheye, and a wide-angle lens. And it just, what's great about it is, one, how it mounts to the iPhone, which is just this clip, and it sort of slides over the corner. So the main disadvantage is if you use a case, you can't, you have to take the case off to use it. But I don't use a case on my iPhone 4, so it's perfect for me. Slide it over. It's kind of two-sided. You have the fisheye on one side and the wide angle on the other, and then you unscrew the wide angle lens to get the macro lens. And so it comes on and off easily, and I've just been playing with it, and the macro is amazing. It's like a 10x macro. And like yesterday, and I just uploaded this to my Flickr, so if you go to flickr.com/maccast, I can never remember if it's Maccast or the Mac. Yeah, Maccast. I just was at Disneyland, and I decided I'm going to shoot the whole day just macro at Disneyland. So I called it my macro Disneyland set. And you can see a bunch of images that I took with this, with the macro lens. And it's just unbelievable, the amount of detail and clarity. And the fisheye is great, and the wide angle is also really nice. So, you know, it's $80 bucks, and you get some nice lenses, and it extends the functionality of your iPhone camera.
That's cool. I like that.
It's really nice. I've been playing with one too. Matter of fact, I picked one up at CES, so I took it to Macworld with me. And the last day of this show, they did this big drum circle thing. It was insane. It was so cool. But anyhow, the point is that I had the Oloclip lenses with me. So I was able to go up on one of the landings where the staircases reverse on themselves. So I could look down on the second floor and photograph the drum circle. So I used my iPhone 4S with the Oloclip. And so I did fish eye and wide angle shots from up there. And they turned out so good that Brian ended up using them in his article about the drum circle at Mac Observer.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Did they have any...
I should probably throw out an honorable mention to... and I didn't pick this up because I'm not at this level. But Jeff, did you check out the iPro lens, people?
It's in my hand even as we speak.
So maybe you can tell everybody about that one.
Okay, so the Oloclip, think of that as your entry-level, really versatile lens enhancement package for the iPhone. And then if you want to go to more of a pro level with lenses for your iPhone, then there's the iPro system.
How do I get it? I want it.
Oh, yeah, you do.
I'm looking at it now.
So well, wait till you hear the price point, though.
Okay, yeah. Just talk.
Okay, so we'll get to the price. We'll build up to that. All right, so it's a case for your iPhone, and it has a little bayonet-style attachment point for lenses. And so it ships with a wide-angle and a fisheye lens, and these are substantially higher-end optics than what you get with the Oloclip. So you get the two lenses, the case, and then the lenses store in this handle that you can attach to the case. And so then you can hold your iPhone by the handle as opposed to having to wrap your hands around it. And depending on what you're doing, that might actually make it more stable. So the two lenses, all of that, it's a $200 kit. And you don't have any other lenses for it. However, in a few weeks, they will be releasing a telephoto lens.
Nice.
And so I got to play with the prototype at Macworld, and it's really nice. So the telephoto lens, they think it is going to sell for $100. So for $300, which, yes, I know, that's more than some iPhones, for $300, you can get what's essentially a set of pro lenses that attach right to your iPhone. And it's, I mean, it is really nice. The $200 price point, well, a lot of people will go, really? I can get the Oloclip and I get three lenses and it fits in my pocket, or spend $200 and get two lenses for the iPro. It's because of the optics. I mean, this is a German company, so it's the German engineering, and the reason they haven't released a telephoto lens or a macro lens is because they have been obsessing so much over exactly what they need to do to make these lenses work right. So the telephoto comes out in a few weeks. They still aren't exactly sure how they're going to do their macro lens. So yeah, so that's how much detail.
What kind of zoom is on the telephoto?
Oh, I don't remember.
Like, not the X number. I mean, like millimeters. Do you know?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Yeah, and just so people know, I mean, the German company that's producing these lenses is Schneider Optics, and they're well known in the cinematography industry for really high end. I mean, this is good glass, and that's the difference between the price points, and that's what you're paying for. And in looking at some of the images, I think Victor had the iPro lens system because he's more into photography than I am. But he was showing me some of his fisheye and the wide angle. And one of the small differences you'll notice if you're a photographer is like with the Olaclip, the wide angle is really nice, but there is a little bit of edge distortion on the wide angle in certain shots when I've been using it. And the Schneider one, the iPro lens system, I'm not seeing that. And same thing on the fisheye. It's just, a little bit more clarity, a little bit more sharpness, especially around the edges and stuff like that. And that's where, better glass and better lens system comes into play. But that's also where all the added cost comes in.
Right. And if someone really wanted to get good glass on a camera, I mean, you can spend $200 on a camera that has good glass.
200 bucks is nothing.
Right.
When you're talking about lenses.
Correct. Right. So for some people, they'll look at this and they'll go, when in the world would I spend that money on just lenses for an iPhone when I'm still limited by the lens that's in the iPhone itself because everything still has to pass through that and the sensors in the iPhone? Well, excuse me. I can see where a lot of people would really like to do this, and I'm actually one of them. Because you're cutting down on the extra gear you're carrying, and with my iPhone, I can still get photos out to people immediately.
Right. Yeah.
Whereas with my point and shoot or with a DSLR, I have to find another means to get images out to people right away.
Right. So, now you're ready to move on to another product?
Well, with the iPro. Is there a way? I see that there are two holes in the back. Is that second hole near the Apple logo?
That's just cosmetic.
Oh, that's so you to show the Apple
you
logo.
Can't hang off a hang another lens there or something to hang on to. Yeah, that'd be cool. It'd be neat
it's
if you
just
could
cosmetic.
If there was some way of keeping the lens with you in a slightly more convenient way than having that handle.
The handle's nice because it helps you steady. I mean, it gives you, it's kind of dual purpose. It, lets you steady it. Plus,
sure, but you're not going to keep that with you.
You're going to keep it with you.
Like
you
always? You're going to keep that in your pocket? I mean, I guess you'll keep it with
you. It's not that large.
Yeah.
If you're using the lenses, if you're someone that's using these lenses, the handle is something you're going to be carrying with you.
Okay.
And a nice little bonus of that handle is that when you unscrew, because it comes apart, and so each side of the handle or each end of the handle comes off, and it's designed to hold one of the lenses. And inside the cap, there's actually this, it looks like an optic grade pad. Mm. So when you screw the lid down, it cleans the lens and it actually puts a protective pad against the glass.
Cool.
So there are benefits to holding on to that whole handle thing. And the bottom of the handle has a tripod mount point.
Awesome. Yep. All right. Another product.
All right. A bunch of really cool styluses. I've been kind of on this stylus kick lately.
Man, it's like you're reading my mind, Adam.
Well, I've been on it because I've been wanting to take. I think I did my note taking app as one of my picks maybe last week or the week before. I don't know if it might have been the week you were gone, Jeff. Note Shelf for taking like handwritten notes. I know it was a big at one point.
That would have been the week that I was gone because I don't remember you talking about
I don't
that.
Know. I don't know if I heard about that either. Okay. Did you actually pick it? Do you recall?
I thought I did. I'll have to go back and check. If not, I'll make it a pick in a future show. Okay. But regardless, I've been messing around a lot with styluses. And one of the big complaints I've always had about any of the styluses is, especially in a drawing app, when you're trying to do fine detail work, the tip, no matter how small it is, always seems to kind of cover up where I want to be able to actually draw and get in and do detail.
Yeah.
So there was this one booth over on the right-hand side when you walked in, and I'm walking up to the thing, and it's just mobbed. I mean, unbelievably mobbed. I'm like, what's going on here? Well, it turned out to be the Jot line of styluses. Are you familiar with?
No.
With those? Okay, so it's Anowit. I think it's how you pronounce the name of the company. I'm probably getting it wrong. I got it right in my interview.
Adonit? Adonit?
Adonit. That's right. I left the D out. Adonit. And what's great about this stylus is that it has a clear capacitive disc that's like on this little ball joint. And so you can actually, when you put it on the iPad or the iPhone, you can actually see right down to the very tip of the device. And it's so accurate, as a matter of fact, that they had to end up developing their own kind of SDK, because Apple recognized with your finger that you're not going to be able to see that. You know, the finger's going to cover it up. So they actually, in most of the drawing apps, shift the point of where you actually draw over a couple pixels.
Ooh.
And they were saying when they developed their stylus, you could actually see it with their stylus that it wasn't lining up exactly right.
Interesting.
So a bunch of the drawing apps have had to account for that and fix it. And so they made a public API available when they discovered this, so that, you know, developers wouldn't have to reprogram for it. They can just incorporate it in and do whatever they want with it within their app.
So you're talking about the Jot Pro?
Well, they have a whole line. They have the Jot Classic, the Jot Pro, and the new one they were announcing, which is the one I got, is called the Jot Mini.
Okay.
But they all use the same kind of capacitive tip. The Mini has a little smaller disc than the Jot Classic or the Jot Pro, which I liked. I like the smaller size. But they all, in essence, work the same. Now, even more exciting, though, the other thing that I got to take a look at that they had they're coming out with a pressure sensitive version called the Jot Touch. That's going to give you 200 levels of pressure sensitivity on the iPad. So of course the touchscreen on the iPad doesn't have any pressure sensitivity in it. So everything is contained within the pen, and they use Bluetooth and a software API to translate that to the different applications. And I think they announced three developers who are already planning to implement their system, including Procreate, which is, you know, that has been another one of my picks on this show too, one of my favorite drawing apps. So, and it has buttons, programmable buttons as well. So you're going to be able to do kind of, you know, that pressure sensitive stylus that you're used to having on your tablet with your Mac, you can now do directly on the iPad screen.
So how does it work? Is it actually pressure sensitive, or is it?
Yeah, the tip has the pressure sensitivity and then reads the information as you're pushing down on the pen. And then the pen has Bluetooth in it and a rechargeable battery, and transmits that to the Bluetooth, you know, when you've paired it up with your drawing app. And then they said they can get 200 levels of pressure sensitivity through the tip of the thing, and the battery will last something like 8 hours, I think, you know, longer than probably you'd be able to run the iPad with a, you know, good drawing app. They said it'll last at least as long as the iPad battery is what they're shooting for. So it's not out yet. It's in development and due out sometime this year. But really, just I got to use it, and yeah, it was definitely. Definitely, you had that pressure sensitivity. You push harder, and you get, you know, thicker, wider line, just like you would expect from a tablet.
That is impressive.
It's very cool.
Yeah, so, and it was only 5.5 or 1 millimeter thicker than the existing Jot stylus. So I don't know how they crammed all that stuff in there, but it felt great in your hand. The weight of it, I'm looking very forward to seeing the final production model. And they said they're shooting for around $100 price point.
Nice.
Very cool. I can see having that and using that.
Oh, I can't do. Absolutely. All right. So now I have, since we're talking stylus.
And I bet you I know the one you're going to pick. It's my second favorite one.
Oh, absolutely.
Wait. Before you go.
Okay.
Question about using any of these apps with the stylus. Mm-hmm. The issue of resting your hand on the screen. I'm looking at Jot Studio. That's the app that Edonit has.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like, based on the screenshot, that you can actually rest your hand there.
They have palm rejection built into their API. And again, their API is open and it's made available to other developers. So they can do whatever they want with it. But he did point out too, especially with the Jot Touch, it's going to get even better at the palm rejection, because they can actually use information from the pen and through the Bluetooth to help enhance the built-in palm rejection in the software.
Because it knows that you're pressing or not pressing.
Exactly.
That's cool. That's really cool. And so the API includes the pressure sensitivity, the changing of the actual place where you're drawing, and the palm rejection, and probably some other things too.
Exactly.
Does Note Shelf have that?
Does Note Shelf have palm rejection?
I don't think it does.
Do they include the API?
Well, Note Shelf is just note-taking software. I'm not sure I understand the question.
I mean, are they using Edonit's?
No, those two are unrelated. I was just saying I'm starting to use a stylus more because I have apps like Note Shelf, which is why I'm interested in styluses, which is why I talked to Jot. But in terms of Note Shelf, the application itself, it has its own unique way of dealing with palm rejection.
Okay, cool. And you did pick that, by the way.
Yeah, and I think we talked about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, on the palm rejection thing, for all the apps that don't support it, which is actually the majority of apps, mm-hmm. I designed, what do I call it, the wrist puck. And so someone just needs to fund this, and we can get it out.
Yeah, put that up there.
You know what? That's a good idea. Maybe I should do a Kickstarter thing.
Totally. Yeah.
Because I've made several and given them away to people, and I carry one with me all the time. And every time I'm at Starbucks and I'm drawing and I have this thing out, people are like, oh my God, where'd you get that? Okay, I should do a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
All right. So the brush or the style. See, I totally blew the reveal right there. but Adam, you already knew.
Yes,
all right. So the stylus that I completely fell in love with is the Nomad Brush Compose. And it's a stylus that is a paintbrush. And it's amazing what you can do with this. You hold it like a regular paintbrush.
Ooh.
And the tip is, it looks like a regular paintbrush tip. It's actually bristles. And it's amazing to use in drawing and painting apps. And a really good example, which they were doing at their booth, they had Art Rage running. Mm-hmm. And so I was playing around doing things like just tapping the screen straight on with the brush. And I was using one of the paint brushes that's built into the app. And instead of just creating a circle, it was all the dots of where each bristle touched. It was amazing the amount of control you had over what you were painting with this. And so it comes with the regular brush tip and then what they call a short brush tip. And so it's like bristles that are maybe a millimeter long. And that's fantastic for working with the brush when you would be using in real life a tool that wouldn't be as flexible as a regular brush, like markers or chalk or crayons, things like that. And it actually felt really good as a navigation tool also. So you have these two tips and they unscrew from the brush, and then there's a blank tip where it's just like an end piece. So you can have your brush set up where it's a single brush or a double-ended brush, and it's just brilliant. And they also have this other brush, which I think it's called the Nomad Play.
Yep.
And it's for kids, and like little kids. And I'm looking at this thing and I'm thinking, oh, this is brilliant. I need to find what I need to do is call, I have a couple friends that have toddlers and I need to call them and I need to get together with them at Starbucks and let their kids play on my iPad with this brush so that I can see how they use it. But it's like this fat brush and the handle is probably 4 inches long and it's curved in such a way that it fits in your hand really well. So it's designed so a little kid can grab it in their fist and just go back and forth on the screen with it. And they can paint and draw. And since when you get excited, especially as a little kid, you tend to just smash the stylus right down or the brush right down. So it has this rubber ring between the bristles and the wooden handle so that if it gets smashed down, it doesn't damage your screen.
Yep.
And it's an absolutely brilliant brush. And I like it so much, I will probably use it myself in addition to the Compose.
Yeah. Ditto. It was really cool. What impressed me most about the Compose was, you know, I'm so used to so many styluses that you kind of actually have to give a little pressure before it starts drawing. And so I thought, well, there's no way this is going to work, this sort of brush thing. But you can just get back from what you're working on, just like you would with a normal paintbrush, and just, you know, lightly touch, and it just glides over the screen and really gives you that kind of feeling of working with the analog tool in a digital world, especially, like you said, with an application like ArtRage. You know, and a lot of people might be saying, well, there's, you know, you can't have individual bristle points on the iPad in terms of the iPad recognizing a touch area that small. And that's absolutely true, but that's where the software comes into play. And all you're trying to do is recreate the experience. So the software takes care of giving you that effect, like you said, Jeff, of you touch the brush and you get all the individual bristle points. But having the tool that translates from the analog to the digital world is key, because that's what we're familiar with and familiar with working with.
Yeah.
Right. So on the software side, to be able to do that stippling like I did in ArtRage,
right?
From what I understand, that's something that the developer has to build into their own application.
Right.
So not every painting or drawing app would support that. It's a stunningly versatile stylus, and it felt so natural.
Yeah, that's the key, that natural ability. You know, if you're an artist and you're used to working with that type of tool and you want to move to this new digital world, those are the kinds of tools that you want. And you're going to have a range of tools. And the other thing that they said is, we have these brush tips now, but the fact that it's replaceable, they are going to come out in the future with additional types of brush tips. So either stiffer brushes or, you know, and it's to give you that feel of the tool that you want to be working with.
So it's awesome.
It's cool stuff like that. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that was going on. And you know, those are just a few examples. And then there were things all over the place and all over the board in terms of price points. And so there was a little bit of something for everyone is kind of what it felt like to me.
Do you have any more? I kind of want more.
Oh, I have another good one for you.
Okay, all right. Go.
And this is one that I ended up with an elevator pitch for this, because I was actually on my way to the Mac Roundtable breakfast and hopped in the elevator, and these guys are holding mountain bike handlebars. And so I asked them why they had the handlebars, or they're here for a specific show. And because they both had matching shirts, and they said, yeah, we're here for Macworld. And I went, okay, with bicycle handlebars, you have my attention. Here's my business card. Here's who I am. Tell me about what you're doing. Well, it turns out that they've designed this iPhone mounting system for mountain bikes. And there are several out there already. And they have like clamps that go around your handlebars, and they work just fine. What these guys did was they designed one that replaces the head on the stem of your handlebars. So it actually is mounting directly into that stem, as opposed to just clamping around the handlebars. So it's right at the center of where the handlebars are. That's important because it's a much stronger attachment. And since it's centered, if you're using the camera on your iPhone to record, the lens on your camera is going to be centered.
Yeah.
And so it's this nice machined aluminum setup, and it works with the case system they have, where you can like lock the case in really tight, and it looked really cool. And that isn't available yet. That they had pre-production models to show off, and they're actually going to be shipping in the next few weeks. But that was from Rockform.
And those guys are cool.
Yeah, so they said that they would get me one when they're actually in production, and that'll be cool because I enjoy mountain biking, so I'll be able to take this out and actually really try it out.
Yeah.
What is it called? Cool. The Rock Stand?
No, it's not called the Rock Stand. I forgot what they're calling it. But it's from Rockform. I don't even think it's on their website yet.
Okay.
Yeah, the Rock Stand is their existing stands. They make these really cool like aircraft aluminum high-end cool cases.
It looks like some seriously sturdy stuff.
Yeah, so picture that cool stuff applied to a mounting system for your mountain bike.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, aren't these the guys that their background is in like motorcycles or something like that? Sort of motorsports, I believe. I may be mixing them up.
That sounds very familiar, so that might be right.
Yeah.
But they were very cool.
The only thing that upsets me about putting your iPhone on your bike kind of upsets me, just because I know that there's the potential for wiping out, and that iPhone is just going to be destroyed.
Well, maybe not in this mounting system.
Maybe not. Yeah. So maybe
if it's encased in a cage of aircraft grade aluminum.
Yeah.
You know, it may actually survive.
Yeah. Maybe they could consider like maybe adding some little parachutes to it so it can eject itself.
I was thinking maybe they could build an airbag system into it.
Yeah. Or airbags. Yeah. You don't have to do an ejection seat if you don't need to.
Let me give you a software one from our friends at Boinks. You guys know Boinks software?
Oh, my God. This is so cool. I mean, Adam, I have no idea what you're going to mention. Please.
Tell me more.
So I've had this software on my Mac for a long time. They do a product called iStop Motion.
I thought we already talked about this.
No, we didn't.
Just be quiet, Michael.
I'm sorry.
It's about to come out of Adam's head.
Okay.
Did we talk about this? There's no way, because this just came out.
iStop Motion for iPad?
Yeah.
I think that was your pick last week.
Did I? Oh, I did pre-pick it. Well, I got to see it now.
All right, go for it.
That's right. You're right. I did. I said I was going to pre-pick this one because I knew it was coming out and I knew it was going to be cool, but I had not tried it. So now I actually got to see it in action, and guess what? I was right. I'm brilliant.
Hey, we already knew that, awesome.
It is. It's really, really cool. And what was cool is I got to see it. They had a guy at their booth actually, who was a local animation guy up there in San Francisco, and he was doing live little animations with it. So he had all kinds of objects, clay and things like that. And so what you can do is you can set up your iPad, and then I think the key to the whole system is as I said last week, they have a companion app for the iPhone 4 and the iPhone 4S, so that you can set that up as your camera. So you can put that on a little tripod and get it right down into your scene, and you can start taking pictures. And the key is they totally rethought the interface for touch. And that's another thing that it was great to see all of these developers who have existing desktop software, but then know that, okay, this is a different system. We have to start from the ground up and really think, how does this work for touch? And so it's compared to the desktop version, it's much more slimmed down and much more simplified. And so the idea is to get the core functionality that you need for the software to work. So key things like, well, onion skinning, of course, has to be in there. You know, that's the ability when you take a shot and then you're setting up the next shot, you get kind of a ghosted image of the prior shot, so you can see where everything was and make sure it lines up. You know, any stop motion animation stuff is going to have that. But then things like the ability to set the frame rate. You know, so I want 15 frames a second or 12 frames a second or whatever your animation rate is going to be, and then be able to drill into that. And, you know, so of course you pinch to zoom in on the individual frames and you can scrub back and forth. And they are pointing out, I mean, this becomes a really good educational tool for students who maybe want to get into stop motion animation. this creates a real easy and simple and fun way to kind of get into it. So you could take this into an elementary school and kids could actually set it up and play around with it and use it and stuff like that. So as we're focusing on more iPads and education, it's these types of applications, I think, that are going to be really key. And then for people like myself who are just like, oh man, I really want to do that Tim Burton-y kind of stuff, to be able to do it on my iPad is just, it's just incredible. But I was blown away by the interface.
Okay, and the kicker, yeah, the interface is awesome. The kicker for me was when I downloaded the iPhone app and was able to use my iPhone 4S camera wirelessly in real time as the remote camera to handle all the animation.
Yep.
That's awesome. I mean, so the iPad, I mean, you could set this up where you're doing like a two-person team, and you have one person off to the side somewhere sitting down with the iPad. And then you have the other person that's actually down in your little, whatever you want to call your studio thing, with the iPhone and the elements that you're animating. And so you don't have to worry about having someone else get in the way. You don't have to worry about just being able to have that wireless connection, and it's in real time. It's just brilliant.
Yeah,
it's a really well thought out application, and then adding in the remote iPhone part, it's awesome.
Yeah, the performance is amazing, and you can even remotely control things like the exposure and the focus. So I can tap on the, you know, can I have my iPhone camera set up, and if I want to adjust the white balance or exposure, I can do that from the iPad screen, which is just crazy.
Yeah, it is.
Awesome. All right. So is there one more, or are we ready to move on to like one piece of news?
I think we can.
We could go all night.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
or all morning, depending on what time you're listening to us.
Right. If there isn't one more burning thing, then we'll.
There's a million more burning things. It was just a great show. I think that proves the point.
It does. It really does. You know, that excitement that was there for the first two Macworlds that I experienced, I think it was 2006 and 2007. Of course, 2007, the show was stolen by the iPhone, but still there was a lot of really cool stuff. And it's great to see that it seems like there are a lot of companies that are really now starting to fully grasp all the power that you can wield with the iPhone and the iPad and all this custom stuff that you can do to just really make it awesome.
Yeah. Jeff, I'll throw out Cloud FTP.
Oh yeah, that's awesome too.
See, we got to mention this one real quick.
What was that?
Cloud FTP.
Okay.
So this is a product. It was a Kickstarter project, also like the second most funded Kickstarter project ever, or something like that, something crazy like that. And it's being produced by, is it Sanho? The
yes.
Guys who do Hypershop and Hyperdrive, the Hyperdrive line of stuff.
Yeah, it's part of the they used to call the company HyperMac, but
right.
now. I think they call it HyperJuice or something.
The products are the HyperJuice products, and the company is HyperShop. Everything's sold through
HyperShop. That's it.
.com. Yeah. But what the Cloud FTP is, and the reason I'm excited about it is everybody always asks me, you know, how do I get? I want to be able to plug my USB stick into my iPad, or I want to be able to plug a USB hard drive into my iPad, right? And get files off of it and get files onto it. And there hasn't been any real solutions for that. I mean, there's been a few things here and there, but it's few and far between. And so what this is a little tiny box. I think it's going to run $99.
$99.95.
Yeah. And it is super small. It's just this little square black or white box. It's rechargeable battery, 2,600 milliamps or something like that. Or is that how they measure the milliamp hours?
Something like that.
Basically, it'll go for about 5 hours, they said, on a charge. And then what you can do is it has a USB port on one side, and then it has a little Wi-Fi hotspot. And it basically sets up a Wi-Fi network between your iPad and this little box. And then it has FTP built into it. So anything you hang off that USB port suddenly becomes accessible through FTP.
Oh.
And I have so many iPad apps that will directly connect to an FTP server. So things like, what's the one I use for PDFs? GoodReader. You can connect directly to it with GoodReader, read and write files off of it. You can connect directly to it with Textastic, read and write files off of it. So that I'm excited about, because suddenly I'm going to be able to plug in a USB drive or a USB key and read and write files from my iPad. And a lot of other people have been doing different types of solutions, but they usually require some sort of, you know, custom app. And a lot of them you can only read files off of, not write to it. And so this is just straight up FTP and local.
And the thing I like about it is that you can plug anything into it.
You can plug anything into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
That's so really yeah, cool.
So if you wanted to have your own, we'll call it a simple Dropbox setup.
Sure.
Where you have complete control over the entire storage system. I mean, you could plug one of these in to your network and then set up a port through your firewall that points to that, to the IP address of the cloud FTP. And now you have remote access to your hard drive anywhere in the world.
And I think they're also going to have Dropbox and Evernote and all kinds of other integrations that they're working on too.
Yes, they are working on that.
Now, is this, what kind of formats does it read? Will it do HFS plus? Or do you know if it's FAT32 only?
Oh, that's a good question.
I don't remember.
Hopefully,
I don't care.
Yeah. No, ultimately, it doesn't matter.
I think it matters. It definitely matters because we're Mac guys and we have Mac formatted hard drives. And if we plug it in and it says FAT32 only, then that's the worst.
Yeah, but considering that it can give you full access to a hard drive's contents anywhere in the world, I would be willing to forgo my HFS Plus to be able to do that.
Now, anywhere,
I'd set up just an extra drive for this, you know, and be mainly for my iOS files. So
anywhere
that doesn't bother me too much.
So how does this work? It's ad hoc, and you can plug it into your LAN as well, is what you're saying.
You can do either. Yeah, and I asked them too, they're going to do, because another common problem with a lot of these devices on the iPad, when you directly connect over Wi-Fi ad hoc from the iPad can only have one, you know, be connected to one Wi-Fi location. So the example is, say you're at Starbucks, right? You're connected to the Starbucks Wi-Fi, now you want to connect to your cloud FTP thing. You'd normally have to disconnect from Starbucks, connect to the cloud FTP thing, and now you don't have a live internet connection. But it will also double as as the connection point. So what you can do is connect the cloud FTP to the Wi-Fi hotspot at, you know, the open Wi-Fi hotspot, and then you connect to it and it passes through the internet for you.
How do you tell the cloud FTP thing to connect to the internet?
I believe it has a web interface for configuring it.
Oh. So you configure it and then it goes, oh, okay, I know about this.
Yep.
Neat. Neat.
Yeah. See? Cool stuff.
Cool stuff. So there isn't really a website for it. I guess it's the Kickstarter page.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Well, but if you go to the Hyperstore website, you can see it there too.
Hypershop.
Sorry, Hypershop.
Yeah.
It's there too.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. What's our news?
I kept paring it down as you guys talked. So,
All right, see you guys next week.
This is the most important thing.
I'm down to one more. It kind of is the most important thing. So everybody who has an iPhone 4S and an iPad 2, and you've been waiting to get an untethered jailbreak, the wait is over, as I'm sure most of you already know. Absinthe A5 is the jailbreak, and it's from the Chronic Dev team. It's an untethered jailbreak, and I've used it on my iPad 2. It works. It's great. It's a little bit different from previous jailbreaks, but it's pretty easy. You basically just plug in your iPad and you hit go and it chugs away for 5-10 minutes, and when it's finished you have a jailbroken iPad 2 or iPhone 4S, and that's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, for jailbreakers that really is nice.
Mm-hmm. It's been a while since go ahead.
I have one question for you because it came up for somebody. Mm-hmm. And I just need to double check this because it was the case with some of the other jailbreaks. Do you happen to know, and maybe we can even test it live right now if you don't know, someone told me that the current iOS 5, is that what version we're on now?
Yeah.
Jailbreaks disable, basically invalidate airplane mode.
Hmm.
And the reason I bring this up is because he actually sent me a screenshot of his jailbroken device in airplane mode receiving a phone call.
Awesome.
And then pointed me to a thread on Apple's support website, and there's a bunch of pilots that are like, yeah, I jailbreak. And yeah, it doesn't work.
No, so, it works on my iPad.
Well, you can enable it, but it did just like disconnect you from the network.
Yeah.
Okay. Is your iPhone jailbroken yet?
It is, but it's a 4, not a 4S.
Okay.
But I mean,
No. This is just an iOS 5 jailbreak problem, though. If you're running iOS 5, and jailbroken, it supposedly, at least some of them disable the. I don't know which specific jailbreak. Maybe it's only limited to a specific jailbreak.
Yeah, I mean there is an issue with the previous one that worked on the A4 chip devices that it screws up iBooks, so I can't read iBooks on my iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
However, iBooks do work on the iPad too with this jailbreak, so I'm kind of wondering maybe I should go back and re-jailbreak my iPhone. But yeah, but
do you have an iPhone running iOS 5?
Yeah,
that's jailbroken right now with this jailbreak.
Mm-hmm.
So if I tried, if you put it in airplane mode and I call you, you shouldn't get the call.
Let me give you a call.
Well, I'd have to call you, right?
Oh yeah, do it. Yeah, it said that I'm in airplane mode. I'm pretty sure it's not going to work. I'd be very surprised.
I'm going to call you right now. It says calling.
Uh-huh.
And it looks like it went right to voicemail. So you're good.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. It was just one of those odd things, you know, because he emailed me the screenshot and he's like, look, airplane mode's broken. And I'm like, what? And I emailed him back and I said, are you jailbroken? And he says, yes. And then when I did the research, there was a thread on Apple's support forum saying, maybe that was the tethered jailbreak or some other version of a jailbreak.
I mean,
there's lots of different jailbreaks out there. So
jailbreaking definitely has its issues. I'm not going to deny that at all. But for me, the benefits are definitely worth it. Okay, so we have one tip that I've been meaning to tell you guys, and so you were talking about a couple weeks ago that with the split keyboard on the iPad, you in iOS 5, you can split it, but it only goes down so far.
Right.
And so listener Mark sent me an email, feedback@wehavecommunicators.com, saying, you guys are crazy, you can do that. And here's how you do it. You know about the two-finger, the pinch-out gesture to split the keyboard?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, split it, and then move it down.
Oh, so you have to, like, split it first?
Split it first, then move it down. Now, if you move it back up and you pull it back down, then it'll come back together. But if you split it, bring it down, then you can have it down at the very, very bottom of the screen, absolute bottom.
Wait a minute, I don't believe this.
Are you doing it?
I'm trying it right now. So I just split it.
Split?
With your fingers, you can't do the split command.
Right.
Yep, and then grab the little handle on the right and bring it down.
It slides back together. What are you talking about?
Nope. I did it like 5 times as I'm talking. Split with 2 fingers.
Right.
And then it's almost at the bottom. Then grab the handle on the right and bring it down.
And see, when I do that, it rejoins back into the full keyboard.
You're crazy. Yeah.
Maybe so.
Do I have to be using 2 fingers to pull it back down? I don't know what you're talking
about. No, just 1 finger. Here's how I'm doing it.
Maybe it's a jailbroken thing.
It's not. I did it before this. Split it apart. So your keyboard's at the bottom first, right? We're starting
now.
Yeah,
when I split it apart
with 2 fingers
at the bottom, the keyboard is pretty close to the bottom.
Yep.
If I try and move it down, okay, now it's working. Never mind.
There you go.
Apparently, it's a very touchy thing.
Yeah, the first two times I tried doing it, I'm like, this guy is full of it. And then I realized, oh, I'm just not doing it right. Now I can do it every time I try. So there you go.
All right. Well,
thanks,
I'm still
Mark.
Lame. I can't do it.
Yeah, well, work at it.
All right. So I believe you. It works.
Cool.
It's not easy to do.
I think it's
easy. I'm sure with practice it will get easier, like so many things in life.
That's true.
But, all right, there you go.
Do you guys
sit corrected?
Do you guys have picks?
Oh, I just did it.
Awesome. There you go.
Okay, so the really, it seems like maybe the key is that you do have to take two fingers, stick them in the middle of your keyboard, split it, and then drag it down.
Yeah, or you can do two thumbs from either side.
Okay. But if you do have to start with a two-finger gesture.
Yeah.
If you just grab the handle and slide it up and then try and slide it back down.
Doesn't work.
Yeah, that won't work.
Ah.
There you go. Yep.
I'm with you. Awesome.
Cool. So do you guys have picks? Or I mean, you had a bunch of picks. But if you
I have an awesome pick. Okay.
I have a good pick, too.
Okay, cool.
Came when I was at Macworld.
All right, go for it. Adam.
Sphero.
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 Oh, I don't know about Sphero.
Is it a robot ball?
It is the robot ball.
Oh, the ball that I saw at CES.
Yes.
Oh, this looks
okay.
Fun.
Did you get to play with it?
No, I couldn't get close enough to play with it, but I could see it.
I want it. You can control it from your... Okay, you say it. You tell it.
You can control it from your iPhone. Basically, it is this Bluetooth-enabled ball that you pair up with your iPhone, and then they have an app that you download, and basically it's a robotic ball that you can drive around with your iPhone. I mean, it's really kind of that simple, but it is so much fun.
It looks cool.
They also have a game for it where instead of controlling the ball and rolling it around, you pick up the ball, and the same sensors that allow it to move can be used to sense how you're moving it. So then you can use it as a controller for video games.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, there's a golf game that I haven't tried yet. But it has cool stuff like, okay, so you can go in and it has colored LEDs in it. And you can, through a little color picker, change the color of the ball.
Oh, cool.
You make it all kinds of different colors. There's one app that allows you to draw a pattern like on the ground. So you scribe a line and then it follows that line pattern on the floor. The one thing that tripped me out at first is, you know, I wanted to kind of control it like I would control an RC car. It doesn't really have a reverse. Obviously, it's a ball, right? It's spherical. So it took me a while to figure out on controlling it that, oh, you know, it only kind of goes forward. I mean, you can make it go around and in all directions, but there is no like straight reverse. So I kept trying to want to reverse it and it wasn't kind of going. But once you get the hang of, okay, it's a ball, it has to roll around the floor and it rolls forward, you kind of learn the controls. So it was a little tricky to learn the controls at first, but ever since then it's just been a blast.
That's cool. And so you can control it with little thumb handles and the gyro too.
Yeah, just you know what? I haven't played around with the gyro part. I'm assuming
you can.
There's a way to do that. I just haven't enabled it yet.
Yeah, if you use the built-in gyroscope in your iPad, that's how they were showing it. I'm sure it works fine in the iPhone also. Yep. You can actually move your iPad around, and based on the way you're tilting it, that's the way the ball moves.
Yeah. Oh, and I should mention too, induction charging. Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So the charging is just this little pedestal with kind of a little bowl in it, and you just drop it in there and it starts charging.
So you're going to send it to me so I can play with it. I have a cat that wants to play this.
They have like a special like video app too, where you can videotape your pets playing with it and upload them directly to YouTube. So yeah, they've already accounted for that.
Oh, just as it should be.
Yep.
And I think in some of the videos I saw, I believe it's waterproof. Like you can drive it into a pool and like then roll it across the pool.
Jeff, has your cat played with this?
No.
Do you have one?
I'm still waiting for mine to show up.
Okay.
Yeah, I pre-ordered it and they were supposed to ship before Christmas and they had so many orders they were delayed and they didn't get them out. So I got a free T-shirt for Christmas.
But okay, so you didn't get one, Adam. You just played with it.
No. I got it. It arrived a month late.
Okay.
So I just got, when I was at Macworld, I got the notice, hey, it's shipped, it's at your front door. And I was like, oh, can't wait to get home. So it was waiting for me when I got home. I immediately ripped it open and started playing with it.
Awesome. That is really cool. $129.99.
Yeah, not cheap, but a whole lot of fun. Yep. Cheaper than the helicopter thing. The
sure.
AR drone.
Now the AR drone is cool with the new software they came out with for it. It makes it so much easier to fly now. I mean, and the new one can do barrel rolls and stuff. And
Barrel rolls? Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
so many just toys.
And it's smart enough now that if you get like really confused, and you can't figure out how to make the drone do something, just stop, and then it will go into a hover mode, and it'll just stop, and it'll float there and wait for you. And if it gets out of range, it'll just stop now and wait for you to get back in range.
Neat.
Yeah. So it'll just kind of hang there in the air till you get back to where it is. It's really cool.
I want that, but that's what, 300, 400 bucks?
Something like
just
that.
Just tell them who you are and they'll send you one. Do you know who I am? Send me one. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, cool. So, Jeff, what's your pick?
All right, mine doesn't have the immediate sexy feeling that Sphero has, but for the people that need it, it's fracking cool. So my pick is PDF Pen for the iPad.
Oh,
you would pick that.
Of course.
I would pick that too.
Except you had Sphero.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
All right, so PDF Pen. So Mac users that are already familiar with PDF Pen, now picture being able to use it on your iPad with iCloud syncing.
Ooh.
Oh, yes.
iCloud.
Yeah, it's really nice. And it works exactly as you would expect it to, but with the touch interface. And they did a really, really good job of making it work with the touch interface as opposed to keyboard and mouse. And, okay, so for those of you that don't know what PDF Pen is, it's an absolutely fantastic PDF viewer and editor that has a much better interface than Adobe Acrobat.
Well, anything has a better interface than Adobe Acrobat.
Okay, there's that.
Yeah.
And it, a matter of fact, so for me, and keep in mind, I come from a graphic design background where Acrobat is one of the staples. I use PDF Pen Pro pretty much every day. And I don't even have a current version of Adobe Acrobat installed on my computer right now because I don't need it anymore.
Nice.
Everything that I need to do, which is a lot with Acrobat, I'm doing all of it with PDF Pen. And now I can do it on my iPad too. And awesome. I tell you how much it costs, but I can't remember.
$10.
$10.
That's an insane
deal. That's a really good deal. So you can... By edit PDFs, you mean you can...
I can go in and change text if necessary. You can't
around,
like completely
change it.
Relay out a document.
Oh, you can't?
But I can fix typos, change names, stuff like that. I can fill out forms. I can add signatures and other graphics to documents. I can put annotations in.
Yeah, you can actually
sign
it with your
finger.
I can combine
and pull apart documents. Yeah.
Yep. For me, the killer app is when someone sends you fake forms, you know, what you call fake forms, basically a PDF form that's not really a PDF form. It's just like a scanned in document.
Yeah.
And you want to do it, finish it up digitally and email it back to them.
Totally.
This would be ideal for that. You can go in, add in all the text, you know, over top of the fake fields and then add a signature, you know, signing with your finger or with a stylus and then email it back. Done.
Yeah. Yeah, that really solves the problem of having to like store your signature digitally on your computer. Which I guess mine is. I can't unlock the one that I have.
Well,
I store mine.
Case,
I store mine.
Problem.
I store mine digitally on my computer. I just do it in a encrypted disk image.
Yeah, me too. I couldn't remember my password, but I figured it out.
You don't have it in your Apple keychain?
Why would I do that?
Because then you don't have to remember your password.
Yeah, but then whoever is using my computer, because I have auto login.
You don't lock your computer when...
No, I don't believe in that.
Oh, okay.
That's too
high. Oh, well, then why don't you just put a post-it note on your screen with your password?
That doesn't make any sense.
And neither does not locking your computer.
Okay, well, shut your face.
All right.
I have one password.
What's your pick, Michael?
I have one password. It's, you know, one password. I don't need to get an app for it. Airfoil Speakers Touch is my pick.
Oh, awesome. We haven't picked that yet.
I mean, I don't know.
We should have. If we didn't, we should have. And if we have, we need to pick it again.
Yeah, well, here you go. Done and done. So Airfoil Speakers Touch, if you've ever wanted to bring AirPlay audio to a speaker dock or something that doesn't have that, or you just wanted to, you have maybe some music playing on iTunes and you want to bring it with you, you want to play it on your computer, but you also want to bring it to your iPhone, this is what you want. So the app Airfoil Speakers Touch, it's free, but it requires the companion app on your computer, which is Airfoil. And Airfoil allows you to take audio not only just from iTunes, because iTunes is the only app, and this is crazy to me at this point with Lion getting all of these iOS features, that Lion doesn't have AirPlay built into it. So if you want to take audio from a website, you want to take it from SoundCloud, you've got Spotify on your computer, whatever, you want to send it to a remote speaker, if you have an AirPort Express, or if you have an iPhone or an iDevice, you use Airfoil to do that. Airfoil is what, $20?
Don't remember. I've had it for so long.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I've only recently really needed it because I started using Turntable.fm. $25. Totally worth it. So what this allows you to do is you take audio from any application that's running on your Mac. And is there a Windows version? I'm not sure.
Yes.
Okay, there's a Windows version too. Perfect. So you send that audio to AirPort Express if you have it, Apple TV, and if on your iOS device you put Airfoil Speakers Touch, you can send it to that as well. So not only can you do it from your computer, but if you already have it running, you just open the app on your iPhone and you hit go, and then you're pulling audio from your Mac as well. So, and I use that so I can send audio to a speaker dock. Maybe I have a speaker dock in my bathroom, plunk my iPhone down, and then I have another AirPlay enabled speaker. So you just have portable AirPlay with you basically wherever you want to go. So Airfoil is the app that you have to pay for to make the magic happen. But once you have that, Airfoil Speakers Touch is what you need. And in addition to that, you can also get Airfoil speakers for your Mac. So if you have another Mac in the house, you can also do the same thing as you can on your iPhone with your Mac. So you can bring audio from another Mac, or I mean, you can even send the audio from your iPhone. Maybe you have some music on your iPhone that you want to send to your Mac, and your Mac has the big speakers. Then you can send it that way through Airfoil speakers as well. But the iOS pick is Airfoil Speakers Touch, but it does require Airfoil, which is $25, and completely worth it. Worth it. And there's a free trial on Rogue Amoeba's website.
Yeah, I think you can get Airfoil speakers for Windows too, so it's a perfect use for that old Windows box that you left behind when you moved to the Mac.
Yeah, $25. It's no brainer. Just do it. If you listen to a lot of audio on your Mac or your iPhone or whatever, get it. Means you don't have to get an AirPort Express. You can just put it on any speaker system you want.
All right, so am I like the only person left that relies on their AirPort Express as the go-to tool to make hotel internet actually work?
I just use my iPhone with tethering.
Okay, so I must be like old school and get off my lawn.
How do you do it? You plug your AirPort Express into the Ethernet?
Yeah. Yep. Okay, so like it.
Then you don't, yeah. Go. Sorry.
Okay, so at Macworld, I could not get connected to the hotel Wi-Fi. And granted, they were having trouble at the hotel. I was at the Intercontinental, and I mean, it's a fantastic hotel, but they were just having trouble. And then when all the Macworld people arrived, plus there was some like laser optics conference going on at the same time, good luck getting on the Wi-Fi network. And if you did, it was insanely slow. So I ended up plugging my base station, my Airport Express in, taking the Ethernet cable in the hotel room, plugging it into there, and setting up my own little Wi-Fi network. And it was great because I had reliable, really fast internet the whole time I was at Macworld.
Awesome.
Yep. Yeah, it's perfect for that because, you know, more and more these days when you're traveling, people are using the Wi-Fi and not the wired connection, but so many hotels still have wired connections. So now you just create your own hotspot. You can make it secure just for you, you know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I travel with my Airport Express pretty much all the time. If I'm going to a trade show, anything like that, anything business related, I have an Airport Express with me. So you'll know I'm in your hotel if you see Pants Free Radio.
Nice.
Cool. All right. So you can get that at in the App Store, and rogueamoeba.com is where you find the Airfoil app. And with that, you can find all of our iPhone picks in the show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. You can send feedback to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. That's where Mark sent his tip to us, and we really appreciate all of your feedback, questions, tips, comments, all that stuff. feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, which is macobserver.com. He's at jgamet on Twitter, and zazzle.com/jgamet is where you can find his drawings on a myriad of different products, including hats and shirts and stuff like that.
They added water bottles now, too.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Like stainless steel?
Yes.
Cool. And you can also find the We Have Communicators coffee mug there.
And everything tastes better in that.
It's true. Adam Christensen's at the MacCast at MacCast.com. He's at MacCast on Twitter. And you can also find the member version of the MacCast at member.maccast.com.
Yep. This week's been a huge Macworld coverage week. So I just released 2 hours of interviews from the show floor on the regular MacCast. And then I did another 45 minutes with Victor Cahiao on just the general state of Macworld and some of the stuff that he saw that I didn't get to see at Macworld for members. So
cool.
All kinds of extra content out there.
Check it out. All right. And with that, we will see you next time. And we have communicators.
An internet. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do?
So what are we going to do?